Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com. Woodhill Community Center. Have a hand in the heart of the city. Support their mission with your donations at woodhillcommunitycenter.org. Toyota in Nicholasville Superstore. Online consultants are standing by right now to help you find your next Toyota. Visit toyotaonnicholasville.com. Lexus of Lexington. Home of the best-selling Lexus IS. Find yours today at lexusoflexington.com. Introducing the redesigned CatholicSingles.com, featuring new ways that put the spotlight on the person and their faith, not just a profile picture. For the past 20 years, faithful Catholics have used CatholicSingles.com, and the reimagined CatholicSingles.com website is ready to help single Catholics take the next step in sharing meaningful relationships with other faithful Catholics. Remember, CatholicSingles.com for faith, fellowship, and love.
Welcome to the Salt and Light Podcast. Be salt and light, glorifying the Lord by your life.
Hey everybody, welcome to today's edition of the Salt and Light Podcast. I am your host, Chuck Fulkerson, joined by the concomitant Annie Fulkerson.
Ooh, I don't, concomitant. Oh, we're back to adjectives, I don't know.
Concomitant. Oh yeah, this is happening.
I don't know. I have no idea.
Well, let's sound
con
it out.
Means with.
Good.
Commit. Is it commit?
Well, you got the with right.
Not.
Co.
That also means with. Go. It's con with, co.
It's with.
With.
It means accompanying.
Okay, I'm with
you. You're accompanying me. So you are concomitant.
Concomitant.
Yeah.
Great. I'm with you.
Like,
I'm with you.
Like, I prefer my pizza to be concomitant with sausage
and ham and pineapple.
No, ham and pie. You should be arrested. Ham and pineapple. That is physically offensive to my soul.
Well, we have been concomitant because we just worked out.
Oh yeah, we were
to
laughing.
Prepare for the podcast.
We were laughing.
I was hysterical laughing as you introed.
As we were coming on the podcast, I'm like, something smells, and then I realized.
It's us.
Because we didn't just do a workout. We did leg day.
No, today's leg day.
Oh, leg day. Yeah. Like, hell
never
has
skip
no
leg
fury
day.
Like leg day.
Yeah, says Batman. Never skip leg day.
Yeah, Lego Batman. Never skip leg day.
Yeah. And we had to get the music right because we listen to very different things when we're working out.
Oh, I know. I listen to angry music when I exercise.
Like Pantera or something.
Pantera, old school Limp Bizkit. I'll even throw in some like DMX. Like I listen to angry music when I exercise.
Yeah, and I don't like that.
And you're
I listen to
can I have some John Denver?
No.
No, you listen to Aquinas podcast.
I listen to like the history of philosophy podcast.
My guess is no one listening to our podcast is exercising right now.
No, probably not. No, but we had to find a good compromise.
So we did 70s light rock.
Yeah. No, we
a compromise between what I like and what you like is 70s light rock.
And it was good. It was the Guardians of the Galaxy soundtrack,
that
which
was
is
good.
Fantastic music.
That is. It's good music. Hookah shaka.
Hookah shaka.
Hookah shaka.
Yeah. And I could do like the Groot dance in place, you know, to the Electric Light
That's
Orchestra.
True.
Mr. Blue Sky in place of the ballistic stretching. That was really fun.
But we did leg day for a very, very specific reason before
we
the
sure
podcast.
Did.
It's terrible. And today's podcast is on
terribleness,
suffering.
It is.
Hence the leg day. Yeah. I mean, and this wasn't just any leg day. Like I got after it.
Yeah.
Whenever I write my own workouts, they're always the worst.
I know. You try and like think you're making it easy and somehow your brain betrays you.
My brain's like, I can do that. And then at the end, I just want to punch myself in the face.
Yeah, just to make just to take the mind off your legs.
Because I was suffering.
Mm-hmm.
So today we're going to talk about suffering. Now, by the way, if anybody knows suffering, it's me.
Why?
Oh, it has nothing to do with being married to you. Calm down.
Gosh,
don't get your.
I thought you were about to
don't get yourself in a tizzy. No, here's why I know suffering. I've had 20
Oh, I know this. Oh, no. I don't have to even phone a friend.
20-some years.
As a pirate fan.
Yes.
I knew this.
Yes. If you're a Pittsburgh pirate fan, you've had decades of suffering. I remember the day. I remember it like it was yesterday. Pirates were winning. Stan Belinda, the closer, was on the mound. And the ball gets hit to the outfield to Barry Bonds before he does steroids. I kind of wish he'd been cheating at that point because he would have had a stronger arm. And he throws the ball into the outfield. Our catcher gets the ball and he can't tag out Sid Bream and his 83-year-old legs. And then they lost. Yeah, Sid Bream was only like 29, but his legs were 83 years old. He had the oldest knees on the planet. And then from that day forward, the very next season, Barry Bonds left, and the Pirates lost for 20-some consecutive years. And then, 3 years ago, they gave me a little bit of hope. A little bit of hope. They went to the playoffs, and then we lost.
They actually had full stands.
And I feel like the guy from The Waterboy, because now I can say, oh no, we suck again! Yes. So if we're going to talk suffering, I've got most of the world beat.
Yeah, I don't know. As a Giants fan, we've won Super Bowls, but
no comparison. There have been more full solar eclipses in my lifetime than there have been Pirate World Series appearances.
But at least you know they're going to lose. You know that they're a training team for the major league, right? I mean, that's really what they are.
Can we just stop now? Because you're making me angry.
Even I can tell an amateur when I see a good Pirates pitcher. I'm like, they're going to get traded next year.
All right,
let's go and win a World Series.
Let's get into the meat of this podcast, because
I'm adding salt to the wound.
You're just angering me. Okay.
Yeah.
You're over there making me angry. You're being bellicose.
Oh, I know what that means.
What does it mean?
I was just kidding.
It means quarrelsome.
Quarrelsome.
Bellicose. I just happen to still have the list in front of me. I don't know that either.
Well, today, let's just dive right in. This topic comes from a listener who came over with his family to celebrate my birthday.
29.
No, I'm a ripe old
29.
Over 30. But yeah, we were talking about the podcast and he was talking about the episodes and stuff, and then requested that we do an episode on the problem of suffering due to a very personal experience in his own life with a family member.
Okay.
Who has kind of renounced, not kind of, who he shared has basically renounced God's existence due to his own personal suffering.
And why? So I didn't really listen to the personal details of the conversation, and you don't have to give me the personal details, but why do you think people renounce God when they're suffering?
I think because it's a really complicated issue, and I think it's because it is double pronged, so to speak. There's a very, very visceral, emotional component to the topic. And then there's a very intellectual component to the topic. And it's other than the more recent reasons that are given in the surveys of faith and science and the perceived incompatibility of those two things by people who are leaving the faith. The problem of suffering is really number one, and it has been for centuries and centuries and centuries. And the earliest,
because the question is always, why does God let bad things happen to good people?
Yeah, and what I'd like to do is actually give you the specific argument, like verbatim, so we can kind of talk about it. And it really goes back, at least in terms of written form, at least as far as the 4th century BC.
BC?
BC.
Okay.
To the Greek philosopher Epicurus, who was summarized by David Hume in the 18th century. So he was a Scottish philosopher. And from that, people have just kind of piled on, from the 18th century. And it's echoed up and down the centuries since then, and especially now in this like postmodern era, we have, you know, the four horsemen of atheism who just kind of beat this drum over and over and over again about the fact that God can't exist because evil, pain, and suffering exists, like the Christopher Hitchens and Richard Dawkins and all of these.
And Lex Luthor.
And Lex Luthor. See,
if it's God even is all powerful, he cannot be all good. That's and if he is all good, he cannot be all powerful.
Yeah, and he really summarized
it. I watched way too many movies.
You know, and we did do a topic on this
right.
Before, but this is a different spin on it. So before, we did the problem of suffering and our perception of suffering and our perception of pain. But this way, I really want to take it a totally different...
We should remember, and I know I didn't prep you for this, but we should remember to put a link to that show maybe in the show notes.
I can do that, yeah. And if you look back at the pictures of, if you're on iTunes, you won't be able to, but if you're on our website, the picture that I put for that episode... You okay?
I'm good.
Okay. The picture that I put for that episode was actually the Lex Luthor picture from the Batman v Superman.
Ah, okay.
It'll catch your eye. But in any case, what Epicurus wrote was a question of God's existence. And he said, if God is unable to prevent evil, then he is not all good. If God is not willing to prevent evil, then he is not all good. If God is both willing and able to prevent evil, then why does evil exist? So here's what I'd like to do. We're not going to be able to wrap this up in 30 minutes. People have been talking about this topic for millennia.
I'll be a little disappointed because I think you can.
But what I'd like to do is to talk about it from an intellectual and logical, rational type perspective first.
Okay. Can I stop you for a second there though?
Yep.
I think that's where unfortunately we lose most people. And here's why. Okay. People make decisions emotionally and then they justify them logically. So when they're suffering, they step away from God because it's an emotional decision and they never get to the justification and the logic.
I agree with that.
And I think that is the problem, right? We think about how we make decisions. When I teach classes on arts of persuasion, it's they make decisions emotionally and justify them logically. So while we can lay out all the logic, I think that the key is to get somebody to emotionally be able to accept the logic. And I think that anger is such a powerful emotion that they've got to take it out on somebody.
And I think that the people who are listening to this, the majority of them will be people like the listener who requested this, who's trying to find information to arm himself with in order to go and minister to others. And so the perspective that I want to come at it from, especially because in this postmodern era, atheism is so rampant and has taken such a hold because they are good at selling the emotion. But atheism is very irrational. It really isn't very logical to be atheistic at all. And so if we can arm especially believers with the truth, with logic and order, then they can take that information and then go minister to others. And I would caution them not to parrot the information, because you don't want to take this intellectual argument and go sit at the bedside of a suffering, dying man and be like, here are the reasons why you should believe in God. That would be terrible. But to internalize this intellectual argument and then go ahead and, you know, and minister to someone armed with that information, I think is much more powerful, because at least you have like the background.
Deliver it coming from a place of love that you know it, instead of just parroting.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah. So I think to start out, what I'd kind of like to do is to just say when I was talking to my dad before this about this particular topic, and we were sort of bouncing it back and forth, and I went through kind of what my thoughts were and stuff. And he said, you really need to give your conclusion first, because it's such a complicated topic. And so I'll take Dad's advice. So we're going to pose a couple of questions and I'll tell you what I think. And then I can kind of tell you how I got there.
Ooh, you can unpack it.
I hate that phrase. Yes. So from we're going to put on my little pseudo philosopher's hat here. And I just want to pose some rhetorical questions. Unless you want to go for it, but I just want people to kind of think about this. We use the words evil, pain, suffering. What do those words mean? So like when people say I am suffering or the problem of pain, I think that your answer might be different than...
I was going to say it's subjective.
It's subjective.
Right. I mean, I was kind of tongue in cheek about my suffering as a pirate fan, but that is certainly not suffering by
being nailed to a cross.
Yeah.
You know, like there's different kinds of... There's different kinds of pain.
Right.
Okay. There's different kinds of suffering. Who defines what it is? Who defines what pain is? Who defines what suffering is?
I guess the individual does.
Maybe. No, these are rhetorical questions. That's why this is such a complicated topic, right? We do have a definition of evil.
Right.
Evil, philosophically, all the philosophers, Aquinas, the definition of evil is the absence of good. It is... Okay. A place where the being of good should be and isn't. So it's the absence of evil. But in terms of pain, what is pain and is it intrinsically evil? Is it all intrinsically bad or is it all intrinsically good or is it a mixture?
So pain, I think pain is very different than suffering. Okay. When I think of pain, I think of pain as sharp, short-lived, and a chemical response or an electrical response in my brain.
Okay.
Okay. I think of pain as a physical, short-lived reaction.
Okay.
That will go away.
Okay.
I think of suffering as long-term that may never go away. Or at least you have the perception it may never go away. But the problem with both of those is that I started with, I think. And everybody, I thinks. Now, a scientist would tell you the definition of pain, that it is an electrical signal in your brain, right? That's what it is. Mm-hmm. Pain doesn't exist. It's just an electrical signal in your brain, which is why they can block it.
And why there are people, there are disorders. It's called, what is it called? CIPA or CIPU or something like that.
It's called SUPERMAN.
No.
Where you feel no pain.
No, this is like a serious disease where people cannot feel any pain. So like... They are in great danger of like scalding themselves because they can't feel a hot water bath. You know, like it's a really serious condition.
Right.
So yes. So pain is a physiological response.
So that's why when I look at pain, that's the way I would define it. I would define pain as acute. That's an electrical response by your nervous system that's going to be ended, and that suffering is different than pain.
Right. And so I think we have to take that one step further and ask, okay, when people say that when the argument is made that if there is suffering, then God doesn't exist. Well, then does that mean that all suffering and all pain is evil? Does it mean that it's all bad? Does it mean that it's all good? Or does it mean that it's a mix?
I don't think it's too much to say that I was suffering on leg day, right? I was in pain on leg day, but it's not bad, right? Pain is just weakness leaving the body, right? It's just pain when you're pain. Pain may come with change, right? With any true growth, there's going to be pain involved with it in order to create change.
Yeah. Well, I would like to share my conclusion. And then I want to go back and kind of talk through some of my thoughts. So I think that removing God from the picture, so removing God and saying that because there is suffering and because there is evil, then God doesn't exist. I think that by removing God from the picture, it doesn't solve the problem. It just removes the tension from the argument. I don't think you solve anything by saying that God doesn't exist when you say that there is a problem, it is pain, therefore God doesn't exist.
No.
If you remove God from the equation, you're just removing the tension from the argument. You're not solving the problem.
No, someone's just looking for someone to blame.
Mm-hmm. Right. So I think that reductionism, that all pain is evil and we would be better if there is one, is none. And how could a good God allow evil and suffering? I really think it's unsubstantiated and irrational because it can't be proven. It's not something that it's an opinion. And you know what opinions are like. So I think it's an opinion, but it's not something that is logical. And I think it's safe to say that it's an irrational conclusion. So let's step away from the subjective nature of the kind of pain that I think most of our brains go to when we think about like personal suffering. Okay, let's talk about a different kind of pain. Let's assume that God did create the world, the universe, everything. Let's at least start from that point.
Right.
Okay. So we have at least an arguable point. Okay. Let's assume that God did create the world and the universe and everything. He created it through Jesus, the Logos, order and design and law. We know this. There's order to the universe, right? There are natural laws that govern creation. Natural law governs our world, and it allows for pain. Pain allows us to know when our bodies are at risk from injury, right?
It's got a purpose.
Yeah, it has a purpose. If you touch something that's hot, you don't touch it again because you'll get burned, okay?
Right. It's your body's way of telling you, stop it.
Yeah. If you step on a Lego, it's painful.
That is suffering.
That is suffering. Lego. If your blood pressure goes up, it's your body's response, or your blood pressure drops, right? You feel nauseous. You start sweating. You get dizzy. Like it's pain. It's uncomfortability.
Right. Pain is a symptom to a problem.
Yes. So it's a warning. Our natural world with its governing laws allows us to reasonably, and I think with a fair amount of accuracy, know when natural processes will occur, right? We can use these natural laws to predict things with fair accuracy. So say like earthquakes,
right?
Like we joke all the time about our friends in California, like eventually falling off into the ocean, right?
Yes.
Okay. You know that you live on a major fault line.
We love them, but they can come live here.
Yes. For a fraction of the cost. This can all be yours. So there are cities that are designed on major fault lines. Natural law tells us that an earthquake will occur eventually.
Right.
Right. So when that earthquake eventually occurs, will God get blamed for the earthquake?
Yes, okay. By lots and lots and lots of people.
Right. So does he not exist because of the earthquake then?
Well, I guess. Well, I mean, many people would say that. They'd say there can't be a God because he wouldn't have made this bad thing happen.
Okay. So I think that that's kind of irrational. I mean, to say that I can use these natural laws that God has created to predict that something terrible is probably going to happen if I build my house right here, then
right
when it does, blame the person who created the law. See how that's I think that's sort of irrational. Maybe the natural processes are acceptable. Okay. I think that these natural processes, whether they be earthquakes or our pain or our blood pressure or these warning symbols that are created in these natural processes, maybe that's easier to swallow, right? Because they're natural laws. Maybe that's easy to swallow. And maybe the harder thing to swallow is this thing about personal suffering,
right?
Due to illness or something. Well, if that's the case, then the natural processes, if those are acceptable, But personal suffering is not acceptable.
Where do you draw the line?
That's a spectrum. We've now allowed a spectrum that says that not all pain is bad. I want to be able to know when I step into a tub that the water is 180 degrees and I'm going to burn myself. That pain is good. So some pain is good. But there's some pain that we don't like, and that's really uncomfortable. So that's somewhere else on the spectrum. So would you agree that there's somewhere along that line where we want to be able to draw some sort of a line, like this pain is okay, but this pain I really don't want, right?
They can't see your line.
I'm always talking with my hands, but I did say line. there's a spectrum. So my point is that, again, removing God from the picture doesn't solve the problem. It just removes the tension from the argument. And moreover, if pain can serve a virtuous purpose, like a warning sign, and if the very same nervous system that alerts us to that pain also gives us the sensation of pleasure, right? Because our nervous system also
works both ways.
It also tells us that things are good and wonderful and joyful and happy and lovely. Then I would argue that it not only proves God's existence, but it proves the existence of a providential God.
Define providential.
One that knows all, that knows all and knows all of the outcomes, knows what is best for all of the outcomes, has designed things optimally.
Okay.
So not just an all good God, not just, which is wonderful, not just an all knowing God, but such a providential God, that God made pain be something that is not evil. It is a warning sign. It's something that gives us meaning. It gives us goodness, right? It gives us both. So I would say that it not only disproves that God doesn't not exist, but it proves that we do in fact have a providential God. So I don't think that God can be disproved by pain and evil.
Yes. That sounds right. I feel like you lost me somewhere in there.
Where?
And we on purpose, by the way, don't superly prepare for these shows so that we can hash them out. And,
yeah, go for it.
So if I'm a doubting Thomas, right? I'm a doubting Thomas. But if I'm a doubter and I've come to the point where I've got so much pain that I don't, why would God create cancer in the first place? Right? Because it's you don't typically hear about it with things like earthquakes and fault lines and stuff. It's usually the personal kind, right?
Right, exactly.
It's usually the personal kind. And it's because somebody that they love died of cancer, or they have a terminal disease, and they're just angry.
Precisely.
Right? They're angry, and it's more about anger, right? So why would they create it in the first place? How does that fit into your plan? And I think that's where people's question would be.
Mm-hmm. And I think that going back to that earthquake example and the natural law and how our bodies are designed, there are natural laws and natural systems that create pain that we all seem to pretty much agree are a good thing. Pain is a good thing because it's a warning sign, right? And so my point is to make a sweeping statement that if there is pain and suffering and God would allow it, then there is no God. Well, that's assuming that all pain is bad. You're making that assumption that all pain is bad. But if we don't want any pain, then we become like those poor people with the disorder that can't feel any pain and that risk getting into a burning, boiling tub of water, thinking they're going to go soak in a tub for, you know, with a bath bomb or something. So, you know what I mean? So my point is that you can't, I think, to make that reductionist statement that all pain is, which assumes that all pain is evil, to say that if there is suffering, then God does not exist. That statement in and of itself assumes that pain and suffering, all pain and suffering is evil. But we've already agreed that all pain and suffering is not evil. Some pain and suffering is good. The pain and suffering we don't like is at some other end of the spectrum. And somewhere along that line, we draw the line where we feel like we can't take it anymore, and we get angry at God and then decide he doesn't exist.
Right.
But it's the anger that makes us feel like he doesn't exist. Logically and rationally, you can't say that he doesn't exist, because we've already established a spectrum along which pain, all pain, is not evil. There is good pain. There's pain that we want. There's just some pain that is uncomfortable that we don't want.
Right.
Did I make myself more clear?
Yeah, no, that's clear. I think where I was getting to was not the pain itself, mm-hmm. but say the cause of the pain. Mm-hmm. Right. So you have a loved one who contracted HIV, mm-hmm. right? Why would a good God let somebody get HIV? Mm-hmm. Not so much the suffering involved, mm-hmm. Involved with it, or the pain involved with it, but why would that be allowed, right? Why does mm-hmm. it exist? And mm-hmm. I think that is the question that stems from the pain.
Yeah. Well, and for that, I think we need to turn to Aquinas. So that is a very packed statement. And
oh, really? You're going to turn to Aquinas?
I have to.
I'm so surprised.
I have to. So in the Summa, he addresses this problem. And Aquinas says, first of all, we need to start with some assumptions that God is love, which St. John tells us in
right.
the scriptures. So God is love. God is love, right? He loves, but he is love. And he created because of the overflow of love. That's where creation came from, was the overflow of love. When you love, love always comes with a sacrifice. God loved us into existence, and that love, is always free as well. So love comes with a freedom. God did not set up shop, so to speak, and start and like a puppeteer just, and yes, I'm moving my fingers like a puppeteer, but and start like a puppeteer just like moving us, right? He doesn't do that.
He's playing with Pinocchio.
I'm playing with Pinocchio with my fingers, waving them through the air. He didn't create us like a puppeteer. He's not Geppetto.
I'm a real boy.
Yeah, pulling strings. He loved us into existence, and you can't have love without freedom and free will. He gave us free will because he wants us to love him. So we have to start from there, that God loves us and gave us freedom. Okay, why do we have to start there? Because Aquinas says that so what Aquinas does in the Summa is he takes the greatest objections to any question that he's going to answer, and then he answers those objections. It's in like a debate form. It's fascinating. Go read it. All right. So he takes the argument that it's written a little bit differently, but it's the same. It's pretty much the same argument. If there's suffering, you know, all this, if there's evil, then God can't be all good. And if he doesn't know about it, then he can't be all knowing.
Right.
And okay. So he goes up and answers that question. What he says at the bottom line is God can bring a good out of evil, which is the absence of good. Evil is the absence of good. So God has a perfect will and a permissive will. What is part of God's perfect will is what makes him up, truth and goodness and beauty. Those are part of his perfect will. But his permissive will allows for free will. It allows for choice. So when people choose the absence of good, when people choose evil, say in the case of a moral evil being committed or a suffering, say the death of a loved one or something, that God doesn't want anyone to die, right? He created Adam and Eve in the garden. He doesn't want anyone to die, but it's part of his permissive will and it causes suffering. But what Aquinas says is that he allows for that as part of his permissive will, because from that he can bring about a greater good.
Got it.
So I think we should be cautious to flatly decide whether we think something is solely good or solely evil. Now, in the case of a sickness or a death, we can only see this like tiny piece of a vast canvas, right? God can see all. He can see all points in time. He is being, right? So we are not. We are these tiny, tiny flecks. We only see a fraction, a teeny tiny, like it's like if you took a beautiful painting and you only saw like 1 millimeter squared of that painting and you decided whether it was beautiful or not. You have no idea what you're looking at. You can't tell what's in the next millimeter. You're not looking at that. You don't see the whole canvas, and God does.
Right.
And so there's a story that I just love that I really want to tell about Stephen Colbert, because I think it really illustrates this point. And it has to do with J.R.R. Tolkien. And I can wrap up with this story. And John Henry Newman, blessed John Henry Newman, uh-huh. And Stephen Colbert, the comedian.
You typically don't have Tolkien and Colbert in the same area.
No, but he is a huge Tolkien fan. Huge. Okay. He could beat just about anybody in trivia. He's pretty spot on with his trivia for Tolkien. Anyway, so Stephen Colbert had a pretty tragic childhood, and his father and his brothers died in a plane crash when he was really, really young. And I think he was 10. I think he was 10 when his father and his brothers were killed in this plane crash. And his mother, you know, was real influential in his life, and he had a great relationship with her, apparently. But he said that the thing that got him through it was a letter, not Lord of the Rings or not The Hobbit, or it was a letter, a sermon actually, written by J.R.R. Tolkien, entitled "What Punishments of God Are Not Gifts?" ? And what's amazing about that is that that letter was written by Tolkien out of his own suffering, because when Tolkien was 3, his father died.
Right.
And his mother, he had a brother at the time as well.
He had a rough go of it.
Yeah, he had a really rough go. And so his mother had to take care of him and his brother. And they weren't in England at the time. They had moved away. And then when they moved back.
France, I think.
Was it France?
I think it was France.
I don't remember. But they moved away. But when they moved back to England, his mother converted to Roman Catholicism and was completely ostracized from her family. It was, I mean, because she converted from Anglicanism. So now she's a Roman Catholic. She's a widow. She has 2 boys and she is destitute. So she turns to the Birmingham Oratory, and there's a priest there named Father Francis. And Father Francis takes a liking to the boys and offers to raise Tolkien and his brother. And this is in 1896, I think.
Right.
Well, less than a decade later, then his mother passes away. So now he's a complete orphan, and he's raised at the Birmingham Oratory. Well, Father Francis taught him about suffering and taught him how to see how to perceive suffering and how God brings about greater joy out of suffering. Hence the sermon that he wrote, What Punishments of God Are Not Gifts, which you can Google, by the way. Now, where does Blessed John Henry Newman come in? Well, Newman founded the Birmingham Oratory, and he founded it after he himself was completely ostracized after he made his conversion to Roman Catholicism in England.
Huh.
And so he founded that in order to give a place for Catholics to learn and to go when they have converted.
When they've been ostracized.
Yes. So you have Newman founding the oratory and Tolkien being able to go there. And then 100 years later, no, not 100. Stephen was probably, what do you think? He was born in the 50s, maybe?
No.
60s. Is he as old as my parents? I don't know. But anyway, so 60 years later, you have Stephen Colbert reading Tolkien's letter and not only surviving his own tragic grief, but coming out of it, seeing not only joy, but the salvific quality of suffering.
Hmm.
So I think there are, it does go back to perception, I think. And the Bible is chock full of, and especially with St. Paul, is chock full of what we should do with suffering. It's why Catholics hang the crucifix in church, because you can't have redemption without suffering. And we see day in and day out.
Like, I can't have ice cream unless I complete leg day.
That's right.
Hashtag ice cream.
But you can't have the resurrection without the crucifixion. And if we are called to be like Christ, then we need to daily see what we have to crucify our own passions and unite our sufferings to the cross. And when we can completely empty ourselves out, which is a painful, painful thing to do. So whether it's physical suffering, and the saints up and down the ages, the saints tell us this, you know, all the time, whether it was, you know, a mental suffering, a physical suffering, many, many of them died very, very young, that we can only know the resurrection and be united to Christ when we unite our sufferings to him. And that's why we have the cross, the crucified Christ in our churches, because we want to participate in that resurrection and can only do that through the crucifixion. And so I'll just leave you with one Bible verse that tells us that we must do this. And that comes from Colossians chapter 1, verse 24. And St. Paul says, Now I rejoice in my sufferings for your sake, and in my flesh I am filling up what is lacking in the afflictions of Christ on behalf of his body, which is the church, of which I am a minister in accordance with God's stewardship given to me to bring to completion for you the word of God, the mystery hidden from ages and from generations past. He wasn't saying that Christ wasn't good enough. He was saying that Christ's atoning death, Christ can't do our suffering for us. He can't make us unite our sufferings to him so that we can participate in his resurrection through his grace.
That's pretty powerful.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Through the grace of God, through the sacraments, we're able to have that. He gives us that strength to take those sufferings, unite it with him on the cross, and realize the salvific quality of suffering. That's it.
Okay. You know, every time you talk about John Henry Newman, mm-hmm. I can't help it.
You're not going to do it, are you?
Do what?
Newman.
No.
Oh, okay.
It's close. It's from Seinfeld. Hello, Newman. Every time I hear John Henry Newman, I think of hello, Newman. Hello, Jerry. All right. That's all we have for today.
So if you have more topics for us, please either call me or send a social media message.
Smoke signal. Hit me on the Insta snap face.
Homing pigeons. Or reach out on our website, saltandlightonline.com.
Or go to Insta snap face.
That's right. All right. Any of our social media places.
St. Anthony Abbott.
Pray for us. Peace be with you.
You've been listening to the Salt and Light Podcast. Be salt and light, glorifying the Lord by your life.
Redbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
We want to help others, especially in places of strife, such as the Holy Land, where Christianity is dwindling by the day. But how to help? Here's an easy way. Buying products through the Holy Land gift shop. Every product you purchase at myfranciscan.org/shop helps Christians support their families and stay in the Holy Land. Olive wood, embroidery, spices, and many more authentic products from the Holy Land are available right now at myfranciscan.org/shop. The Holy Land Gift Shop, bringing the Holy Land home.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media. Find more about us at breadboxmedia.com.